What's going on, everyone? Welcome into another episode of Finsider Radio. My name is Jake Mendel, and as always, I am joined by the one and only Josh Houts. And before we get into a variety of different things, including Madden 21 thoughts, Jarvis Landry talk, that's a thing. Shaq Lawson, maybe is he flying under the radar? We shall see. And Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald review some Tua nuggets. And as we know, it cannot be a Josh Houts podcast without plenty of Tua talk. Before we get into there, though, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Hit us with a review. Anything like that would be greatly, greatly appreciated. Josh, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm good. It seems like, you know, the Twitter fingers, the typing fingers are going. We're seeing a lot of stories come out. It actually is starting to seem like we're getting close to those off-season, preseason camps, excuse me. And there's plenty of things to look forward to. And I think to get things rolling here, we're lucky enough to receive Madden 21 codes. And I was lucky enough because there just so happened to be this random guy who's a fan of the show, and he said, hey, do you want a Madden code? So that was very cool. Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. And, I mean, there's not a whole lot that we can talk about with the demo other than, you know, it felt a little bit different than previous Maddens. But, you know, overall, you can only play four teams, so that was kind of a real boner kill. But I don't know. What were your thoughts on the demo?
First off, I thought it was pretty frustrating that for four teams, there was 60 gigs. So you needed that much space on your Xbox or PlayStation, whatever it may be. I thought that was a pretty big bummer. A demo is something you kind of just want to get. You have an itch to play it, itch to try it, and you kind of move on. So that was a little head-scratching. And, you know, I did feel kind of authentic, the fact that, you know, your gamer tag and number would be floating around the screen. So in case you, like, took and shared pictures, you would get yelled at. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, they just want to make sure none of their super secret tricks about how they just remade, you know, updated the rosters and throughout the same game, but I don't know. It felt different. I thought it was nice that, you know, when you were getting hit as the quarterback, you know, sometimes he could release the ball as he was getting contacted, and that just never happened in years past. And I don't know. It actually felt with you actually had control with the right analog stick. So it was a decent get, but like you mentioned, we only got to play this thing over July 4th weekend. So we didn't really have that much time to dive into this game, but it'll be out soon enough, and I don't know. I'll probably buy it because I'm a sucker and because it has Tua in it.
Yeah, that's kind of a big issue I find myself starting to run into here. For the first time in about roughly 4 years, I played a Madden demo, and I was actually pretty jacked up from the moment, you know, the game environment starts up and the hype surrounding, you know, the game you're about to jump into for, what, a, you know, 25 minutes or so. I got excited for it. The atmosphere was fun. I had a good time playing it. Everything kind of seemed smooth. And that's scary for me to say because I'm falling into the trap. I'm falling into the horrible, horrible trap.
Yeah, I wish I had that type of self-control. The other big thing was a lot of these ratings started to leak out from Madden. And although they're not confirmed, the Dolphins' top 10 looks like this. Byron Jones is an 88 overall. Kyle Van Noy is an 86. Devontae Parker is an 84. Xavier Howard is an 82. Jordan Howard is a 79. Mike Gesicki is a 79. Matt Breida is a 79. Raekwon McMillan is a 76. Devon Godshaw is a 76. And Albert Wilson is a 76.
The thing about these here is they don't really I don't get too worked up over them. I think the issue with these ratings is something much bigger where I feel like when you're playing Madden, if you aren't using one of the top 5 or 6, it's not. You know, you can't have the talent beat out, like, the rating, the Madden rating on the roster. Like, for instance, you know, a 91 versus a 76 or whatever, maybe just feels really bad. And it's just a tough, tough uphill battle that just isn't likely to go your way. So the game doesn't promote you to play with, you know, your favorite team in that sense. I saw people get a little whiny, I guess, about Xavier Howard being an 82 overall. And I guess the big thing with that is it's important to keep in mind that a rating here isn't just your overall skill. Something like injury, something like consistency, those play a big role in these. So being an 82 overall, I completely understand if he was healthy for an entire season. I wouldn't be surprised. Byron Jones, 88. You know, Howard would be the 91, 93 if he plays a full season. That's not something I really want to get myself worked up about, though. That, for the most part, stood out to me. Was there anything you were a little surprised? I mean, Gesicki at 79 is kind of cool. I mean, I don't think I view him as he has the potential to be like a, you know, this is really a layman's, you know, terms here. But, you know, if we expect him to be, if we're using Madden lingo here, 86, 87 overall, I mean, I don't know if I'd say he's a 79 yet. I mean, that's pretty exciting, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing we got to keep in mind is that this came from a beta. So as soon as the game releases, there could be an update. I know that they came out and said Saquon Barkley was an 89 overall, and it turns out he was 91. So I don't know how accurate these ratings are, but, you know, it's pretty cool to see how some of these guys rank. And I guess you're right. The Xavier Howard thing is a real head scratcher because you see some of those cornerbacks that are rated higher than him, and it's just crazy. And then Devontae Parker, we saw what he did to Stephon Gilmore, who's rated 99 overall. I think Ladarius White's an 89 or something, and you got Devontae Parker here in 84, and he went out there and had his way with some of those corners. So I think a lot of these numbers can be adjusted, but you can't be too upset. I think the biggest thing here is that yesterday I said the Dolphins are the worst team in the game. Someone who actually works at EA came out and said that they're not the worst team in the game. So that's something to keep an eye on. So I don't know how accurate these things are, but overall I think I was pretty pleased with the way these guys are rated.
There's a team – are the bank? Would the Bengals be worse? That's got to be it, right?
Yeah, the Bengals or Washington. I mean, there's a couple other teams that could go either way, so.
Right. Interesting stuff. Speaking of stuff, I really didn't know how else to go about describing this because we've reached, you know, peak offseason, and go figure the week I'm saying, you know, Barry Jackson's releasing a lot of, you know, fun stories, conversational stories that really get you thinking about the training camp's coming up, but it's a slow time, and honestly, it's not like we're going to get news. It's all just, you know, casual talking, ranting about what we think is going to happen. So we had this tweet come out. These tweets come out. I don't know how much I want to agree with these, but what's this guy's name? Logan Lane? Am I pronouncing that right?
I guess. We'll go with it. Logan Lane. I mean, he's dropping some bombs out here about a player that I don't know. Just tell the story. This is bad.
All right, let's... His tweets go, privately, Jarvis Landry was devastated by being traded from the Dolphins. I don't think that was too private. I think he was very upset. I think he even came on the record and said something along the lines of, you know, Adam Gase used to say, you know, we'll send you to Cleveland as a joke, you know, because that's the joke. They're 2-14, you know, who wants to play for them? And then, you know, when he was actually traded to Cleveland, he was very upset about that. Felt, you know, they turned their back on him, yada, yada. So I don't know how private that was. I think there are plenty of stories actually talking about that. It was the coaching that wanted that he wanted away from, not the city nor the team. Yes, the Gase, they didn't get along, clearly. He has since been proven right on the coaching woes. If given the opportunity, Jarvis Landry would return in a heartbeat. Opportunity, I think, is a funny word here because there's also the sense of Jarvis Landry, he could have kind of taken a pay cut, but I think that was another huge thing going into the Landry trade is I don't think the Dolphins wanted to trade him or, you know, pay him for a long-term deal, and I think that was a huge part of it over anything else in terms of talent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree, and I just don't know where this came from, if he was just bored one day and just decided he was going to report this, but I don't know how much you can put into this. And the biggest thing to me is, I mean, most Dolphin fans would love to have Jarvis Landry back. But then you look at trade compensation, you look at that big contract that he has. I mean, it just wouldn't make sense for a team that is looking pretty good at wide receiver, you know. But would we all welcome Jarvis Landry back with open arms and love to see him and Tua build that, you know, that chemistry together? Absolutely. But, of course, he wants to be here. I mean, I'm sure he loved being in Miami, but him and Adam Gase were never going to belong. And it's the same way with the JHI thing. So I don't know. I just think that we all have to move past the Landry gang and be happy with the receivers on the roster.
Yeah, and, you know, that tweet I don't even think is the one neither of us had a problem with. That one, it seems pretty safe. I think we can all kind of sit there and say, yeah, you know, everything here, you know, pretty much makes sense. I don't think it's too crazy. And then things go from like a 3 to like an 11 here. So he adds some follow-up tweets. The story, as I have it, goes that in addition to the many disagreements Jarvis had with Adam Gase on his usage, play calling, etc., Gase appeared to have gotten in the way of a deal that could have brought Odell Beckham Jr. to the Miami Dolphins. This took place while the Dolphins front office was very unsure of Devontae Parker's development and were desperate to give Tannehill whatever he would need to properly evaluate him. Ultimately, Gase stepped in and shut down the conversation, citing Odell's character. That is an interesting couple of tweets, Josh. I think that's the first way I can display it. When you read this, what was the first thing you were thinking?
I don't know. It all goes back to the source. I really never heard of Logan Lane before this, so I can't really put too much stock into what he's saying. But we were talking about Matt at the beginning of the show. This is pretty much a Madden trade, thinking that Odell Beckham would be coming to Miami. But, you know, if these reports were true, who would be the guy to step in there and make sure this trade doesn't go down? Of course, it would be Adam Gates. So I don't know. I don't put too much stock into it, but at the same time, it won't surprise me one bit if they thought bringing in Odell Beckham, you know, to pair with Jarvis Landry with Ryan Tannehill would be a good idea. And, you know, who's to say it wouldn't have been? But Adam Gase ultimately stepped in and did the Adam Gase thing. It's just crazy to me that this is how, you know, far into the offseason, like you said, that we're getting, where we're just starting to talk about stuff that, you know, the fantasy world. I mean, we always talk about these rumored prospects that you could go after, or maybe this guy, he's on the trading block and the Dolphins can maybe make a trade for him. But this is just completely out of nowhere. And we were all kind of just eating out of this dude's, the palm of his hand, just talking about Jarvis Landry the entire day, knowing darn well it's never going to happen.
So I wonder if this was like 2017 when this happened, when Jay Cutler was the guy. The squad could have been Jay Cutler, Jarvis Landry, and Odell Beckham. Oh my God, that would have been incredible.
Nice reality show right there.
and the weird thing is about that, I feel, is Miami's receiving core at that time, I don't think anybody was upset with Kenny Stills, Parker, who was just solid, Jarvis Landry. I mean, I don't. What would you have traded for Odell Beckham? Are you getting rid of a first at the time? How desperate were they? You know, this is all like, I follow along. It's the offseason. I'm following along with these ideas.
Yeah, it beats the heck out of me. I mean, I'd give up a second round pick for Odell Beckham in a heartbeat, but I just don't see a world in where that would happen. And even, you know, after his down season last year, even if you want to trade for Odell Beckham right now in present day, I mean, you're probably giving up at least a first round pick. So you'd have to assume that the Dolphins would have had to move a first round pick or someone of equal value, you know, maybe a Laremy Tunsil, who knows? It's all just what ifs, and that's all it can be.
Hey man, that's what our fandom's really based on when you really think about it. It is kind of cool though, you know, we're finding different things and different stories, you know, what not to talk about. We have a pretty large column here from NFL.com writer Adam Rank. And I'm only going to go part of it here, part of it that I thought would be pretty interesting to talk about, where he predicted that defensive end Shaq Lawson will be the Dolphins' breakout star of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy to think about. He signed a 3-year, $30 million contract. And, I mean, I love Shaq Lawson coming out of college from Clemson. I thought he had all the talent to be, you know, a very good pass rusher in the NFL. And last season he had, I think, six and a half sacks. With the Bills, he wasn't really a full-time player, but he's coming into Miami. They got that great secondary. I think there's no reason why he can't go out there and be that defensive end a lot of people thought he was heading into the draft, and, you know, become a solid end for the Dolphins that they desperately needed. You know, even when Cam Wake was here, he was a little bit, you know, wasn't great against the run. I mean, I think Shaq Lawson's very good against the run, and he can even get to the quarterback. So I think the sky's the limit for him, and I think that's why the Dolphins gave him the contract that they did.
Yeah, he isn't yet to reach he is not able to reach double-digit sacks yet in any season. But Rank really is thinking that Brian Flores might see him as someone who's just going to be really flexible. Rob Ninkovich comes to mind, Mike Vrabel. These are guys that Rank brought up. And, you know, it's interesting because I think there are going to be sacks to be had for this Miami Dolphins defense, especially with 23 last season, last in the NFL. There's only a place, the only way to go is up. I remember when Taco Charlton came in last season, and he started actually getting a couple sacks right away. And I think that was twofold. One, I think it's because he was probably the most talented defensive end on their roster. But two, I mean, sacks are available you just have to reach a certain level and someone's going to start getting them. You know, Andrew Van Ginkle started to get them because they're out there. The opportunities are there. It's just all about capitalizing. And, you know, I think, you know, that opportunity plus talent is what you really get that breakout star. And I think Lawson will have that. That's why I kind of wanted to bring this up, because the situation for him to really grow and really be a focal point of this defense, especially when you have, you know, guys like Kyle Van Noy over the middle, I think it's going to be pretty exciting to see. When's the last time the Dolphins really had someone in terms of Shaq Lawson? Maybe not, you know, a rookie defensive end, because we don't want to talk about Deion Jordan or Charles Harris, but the guy who's, you know, 26, 27, really just trying to go into that soft spot of his prime where he can really get going. I mean, Vernon maybe, but I think he was only here for his rookie contract.
Yeah, and it's exciting just to see the way this defense works now that, you know, Brian Flores had a year to implement a system. He kind of knows what he needs in the defense. He went out there and he got these picks. You know, he got a Kyle Van Noy, Raekwon Davis, Anoa'i Igbinoghene. You know, the list goes on and on. I'm excited to see the way this defense works because they don't have that, you know, the Jadeveon Clowney or the Yannick Ngakoue that everybody wants the Dolphins to trade for at speed rusher. They got these Shaq Lawson, these Emmanuel Ogbas, you know, these guys that are going to get those sacks because the Dolphins have such a good secondary and they're not going to, the quarterback's going to have to sit there and hesitate and wait for a receiver to get open, and it's just not going to happen. So I think Shaq Lawson's going to accumulate sacks based on that. And I do still think that his best football is yet to come because, again, based on the kind of player he was at Clemson, I think that he has yet to reach that full potential. And I think, like you said, in Brian Flores' defense, the sky's the limit for him to exceed and exceed in numerous ways. So I'm excited to see where this entire defense works, and Shaq Lawson is definitely a huge part of what the Dolphins did this offseason.
And the Dolphins have a lot of balance, not in the sense of players who can stop the run and stop the, you know, pass rush, excuse me. I mean balance in the sense of as people rotate in and out, I don't think they're really going to miss a beat. I think they're going to really have a lot of good packages they can really put together on that front and that defensive line. When you kind of think of guys like Van Noy, when you look at guys like Van Ginkle, who can really work his way around the field as well. Vince Beagle really came on last season. And it's kind of the opposite of what the Miami Dolphins have done for the last 10 years in the sense of, I'm going to kind of use the Madden lingo here, but, you know, Ndamukong Suh is, let's say, a 93 overall. No pun, his number was 93. Cameron Wake, let's say another 90, who's 91 overall. There we go. So they're a 93 and 91 in Madden, but yeah. Outside of that, the Dolphins would have, like, you know, a 76 and maybe a 78, maybe an 80 if they're lucky. What we see here is a lot of guys who have, you know, 86, 87 potential who can really just consistently, you know,
yeah,
give the Dolphins opportunities to get off the field in three downs. I think one thing we're really used to seeing is, you know, those completions on third and longs. I can't, you know, think about how many times over the last 3-4 years the Dolphins have really struggled to get off the field on third down. When you don't have guys that are really gassed, when you have guys that can come in and hide, maybe shroud different weaknesses on the defense, that's how you get off the field because, you know, maybe it's third down and 15, but an offense is at two plays to really see something, you know, something develop in terms of how a defense is working. This group really gives me hope, and Shaq Lawson, someone who can really rotate with those pass rushers and be effective, is one of those guys I'm excited for to really try to make the Dolphins get more opportunities on offense. And in
yeah, just based on the way the season's going to go, I mean, you don't know how soon these players are going to get hurt, you know, how fresh are they going to be as the season goes on. So, I mean, whether it be a heavy rotation in the secondary or, you know, it be with the defensive ends, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities here, and I'm excited to see the way it all plays out.
We have some, let's move into it. Josh, I know you've been, you know, shaking over there. You've been ready, riled up, waiting for this one. Bear Jackson has some Tua nuggets here. A source with in touch with the Dolphins said that the great likelihood is that Ryan Fitzpatrick will open the season as a starter. The Dolphins are open-minded about playing Tua if he shows command of the offense and consistently impresses in practice, and if the team isn't performing well under Fitzpatrick. They aren't going into the season with a plan to definitely redshirt Tua, bearing some health setbacks. I think that was pretty much an own. One pet peeve I saw is, some people are saying best case scenario, the season's canceled and Tua gets a year to grow. That sounded really weird to me. I think worst case scenario, you want your quarterback to get snaps in the NFL. You want him to be able to play a couple games and get those snaps under his belt and look into the 2021 season as when the Dolphins are a real deal. So I thought that was strange. I don't think anyone really should have expected a red shirt. I think they're going to give him opportunities to get snaps. You're the fifth overall pick for a reason. Agent Drew Rosenhaus, who he doesn't represent Tua, said on a radio show that he expects Tua to start by week 4. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. I think it really, you know, it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. As much as I want to root for him and as much as I want to think that Dolphins have a great season, they go 10-6, Ryan Fitzpatrick's the guy. Tua, you know, sorry, man, there's just, we're winning. We'll let you know when we need you type of thing. But it just hasn't been his career, and it does. I hope none of this sounds like you're rooting against for him, because I don't think anybody is. It's really fun when Fitzpatrick's good. But you kind of know what to expect once you hit 38 years old in terms of someone's tendencies in the NFL. So, yeah, I think weeks 8 to 10, the bye week. But I also could think, you know, training camp, you know, you read one too many articles about how wonderful Tua looks and how everybody behind the scenes can't stop talking about him, especially, you know, with these – odds are, you know, there aren't going to be people at these mini camps. You know, it's going to be up to the beat writers to share how this magical experience. And if everybody gets hyped up, who knows? Maybe we could see him week one. Either way, though, I think it's probably likely Fitzpatrick will be floating around for roughly half the season or so.
Yeah, and again, it all really comes down to how the league progresses with everything going on with COVID-19. How is Tua going to get in there and grasp this offense? How as much is he learning over Zoom meetings and things like that? But I think, you know, everything you keep hearing, and I know it's kind of the down season, but this kind of seems like a no-brainer to me. You know, if Ryan Fitzpatrick's not playing good, they're going to turn to Tua, the fifth overall pick, you know, the future quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. I mean, that seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't really know about week four if he's going to be in there that soon, but I do think, you know, once he gets acclimated to the system and once he goes out there and he's showing these coaches these reps and just doing things that, you know, a Ryan Fitzpatrick can do at 38 years old, you know, as long as Tua's healthy, I think he's going to be, you know, breathing down Fitzpatrick's neck. And as we've seen in the past, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick does not string together these two or three good seasons. It's why he continues that cycle of, you know, sign that big contract, playing well, you know, it just keeps a repeating process where Ryan Fitzpatrick never quite becomes that guy. And he knows that he is, you know, the transition to what the Miami Dolphins hope they have in Tua Tagovailoa. So I think early on it's going to be the Ryan Fitzpatrick show, but I don't expect them to be winning enough games that it's going to interfere with Tua getting those reps. And I think once Tua gets out there and gets a chance to prove that he's the guy, you know, it's going to be hard for them not to hand him the keys sooner rather than later.
Before we wrap up here, also in that same story, Bear Jackson had some information on the running backs, and I thought it'd be nice to bring this up, seeing how we just did our show about that last week. If you didn't get the opportunity to listen to it, go check it out. But it, you know, kind of states the obvious here that Jordan Howard and Matt Breida are going to be the 1-2 punch. Breida is a better third down back. It makes sense that Howard would start, and then you ride the hot hand as the game unfolds. Dolphins are up 14 points. Probably Howard gets a good go. Dolphins, you know, down 10. You know, you start throwing to Breida, you make it work out of the backfield. This is where I'm going to take a little bit of a victory lap again, because I think, you know, we've taken the lap around how we don't think Kalen Ballage is that great. But also last week, what I did say is that I think, you know, him having that experience in the NFL in this wonky offseason, knowing what he's capable of, maybe they loved him in practice. I think that would be enough to kind of keep Kalen Ballage around a lot longer than some people might think. It says right here the Dolphins want another look at him even after a disastrous 2019 when he dropped four passes and averaged a meager 1.8 yards per carry. If he's good in the preseason, I could see him sticking as the number three. Again, I think it kind of makes sense. I know, you know, it's not what anyone wants to hear. You kind of want the unknown. But when you have four, you have five running backs, something like that, you want some expectations, some standards coming in. You don't want There's a little bit more of that veteran presence with Kalen Ballage around. If he's gone, Patrick Laird and Miles Gaskin would be the internal options for the number three job. I think it's only going to be internal in that sense. I can't see the Dolphins going out and signing another running back, especially with Laird showing enough, as we spoke about last week, and Miles Gaskin still just needing a really opportunity to get some snaps and make a name for himself. What's interesting here might be what isn't said. If Miami keeps four backs, likely the Navy seventh rounder Malcolm Perry has a good chance of that fourth, provided he shows anything in camp. The Dolphins are expected to use him at both running back and receiver, as we've heard multiple times. So it seems like here, all things considered, it's Kalen Ballage, Patrick Laird, and Miles Gaskin. Based on what Barry said here, those are the three guys fighting for that three job. Yep. And everything else is kind of locked in place. And that seemed a little weird to me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but I guess that's kind of what you get when you go out there and you sign a Jordan Howard and a Matt Breida. And then you kind of move down the list and you see Kalen Ballage. Like we said, you know, he's only been in the NFL for two seasons. So as down as we are on him, you know, maybe the coaches feel differently. I thought it was interesting that they said Malcolm Perry just needs to show anything to stick. And, you know, Miles Gaskin versus Patrick Laird, it'll be an interesting battle. But you got to believe Patrick Laird has, a little bit of a step on Miles Gaskin based on what he did last year. Because I think Miles Gaskin looked pretty well in the limited opportunities he had. I think Patrick Laird, you know, showed overall, you know, he could catch, he could block, he could do all the little things that you want from a running back. And you keep mentioning Danny Woodhead or Rex Burkhead, you know, I kind of think that that's the mold, and that's kind of what Patrick Laird is going to be, is this gym rat that just goes out there, puts his head down, and gets that sure yardage. So We'll see how it unfolds, but I think our running backs, like we said last week and like we'll say again right now, are a hell of a lot better now than they were last year. So between the offensive line and this running back group, you know, it should be much, much more improved than that 32nd ranked offense from last year.
Yeah, and you kind of hit the nail on the head in the sense of we're arguing, or, well, I guess discussing, Miami's third and fourth running backs. I mean, it's just that point in the offseason where, you know, you're 100% right. When you have guys like Howard and Breida, there isn't a lot of room for flexibility, you know, and that's not a bad thing whatsoever. However, with you know, everything that's going on this offseason, I think it'd be smart to keep as many running backs in reach. I still think, you know, Patrick Laird has got to be the fourth, with Gaskin and Malcolm Perry being practice squad guys. I just have a hard time seeing a seventh round flyer already being so locked into having an opportunity. It just seems so weird without, you know, seeing the snaps or seeing him on the practice field that, you know, we're locked in as him being our guy. Again, it could happen. He could come out, shock everyone, but, you know, there's a reason someone you know, as a seventh-round pick, Tom Brady was a seventh-round pick, and sixth-round pick, and he didn't start for 2 years. You know what I mean? I'm not saying he's going to be bad or anything. I'm just saying, you know, you got to walk before you can run in the NFL, and I'm excited to see the walking, but we just haven't yet.
Yeah, I completely agree, and it's all going to just matter on how these the NFLPA and the owners and how they go through it and agree on how this offseason's going to look, and, you know, nothing can really be set in stone until we see how some of these guys are going to be able to go out there, perform, get the opportunities to show that they belong on this roster. And then, is there going to be an expanded roster like we mentioned last week? You know, is the practice squad going to be longer? All these things need to be figured out, and it sounds like, you know, they're further apart than we want to admit. I don't know if we saw this, and we'll talk about it real quick, is the Philadelphia Eagles said that there will be no fans at home games. And to me, I think that's kind of the start of what we're going to see throughout the entire, you know, United States, is that they're not going to have fans in attendance this year, and it's going to be much different than we're accustomed to, but we have to adapt the same way we're adapting in everyday life, and, you know, hopefully if everyone does their part, we'll be seeing football sooner than later.
Man, it doesn't, to me, I think there, you can't say it doesn't matter, because I definitely think it is. I think there are people who are consistently just really good at football, and people who go above and beyond when they're feeding off that adrenaline. Obviously, they're both incredibly talented athletes, just how they work. You know, someone might be a little bit more nervous and can perform better when no one's around. Who knows? I think that's going to be kind of an interesting aspect of it. But, you know, fans, no fans, man, we're talking about football games. And truthfully, if I can sit on the couch, follow fantasy, watch some football, talk about the Dolphins, I mean, I'll sacrifice, as someone living in Massachusetts, not being able to go see a game.
Yeah, man, I completely agree with that. Guys listening at home, please remember, like, subscribe, rate our podcast. You know, we are nothing without you. Ask us questions on Twitter. I am at Houtz, H-O-U-T-Z. Jake is at J-Mendel, J-M-E-N-D-E-L-94. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. Again, like, rate, subscribe the podcast. For this episode of the Jake and Josh Show, the Finsider Radio, we'll talk to you next time.
Fins up.
Fins up.
That was Finsider Radio, part of the Finsider.com and the SB Nation Network.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, because we're the Miami Dolphins. The greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami. number